Welcome to Brands and Campaigns, the stories and people behind clever marketing moves, powered by EKR. I'm your host, Camden Bernatz, Creative Director and Head of Brand Strategy at EKR.
All right. So as I mentioned before in the past episodes, the goal of this show and the focus is to feature the people and stories behind interesting marketing, right? Not just to review, was it good? Did it work? Things like that. But actually, how did things come to be? And so the focus of today's episode is a commercial that is perhaps one of the more memorable, at least if you're my age or older and we're around to witness it. It's an earworm. It has led to memes. It has led to Halloween costumes and parody and lots of things. And that is the commercial from Starburst called the Berries and Cream commercial, or the Little Lad commercial. If you've heard it before or seen it before, you probably immediately have this little tune in your head. If not, this is where I ask Adam, our producer, we cut and we put the audio in. We should do that for the commercial.
You tried these berries and cream Starburst?
Pardon me. What kind of Starburst did you just say?
Berries.
And berries. Berries and what else?
And cream.
Berries and cream. Oh, hurrah! Berries and cream, berries and cream. I'm a little lad who loves berries and cream. Berries and cream, berries and cream. I'm a little lad who loves berries and cream.
This commercial, the berries and cream commercial from Starburst, was very simple, just selling this new flavor of Starburst and a very common candy, and they had a berries and cream variety. But because of its unique nature, its silliness, its memorability over time, I really wanted to dive into how did this come to be. And so today joining us, we have Winslow Dennis, who was the producer over this commercial. So Winslow, thank you for being with us today.
No, thank you for having me. And it's funny, earworm is something that I hadn't heard in a while, but yeah, it definitely was one of those.
Yes, it's something that over time, if someone ever mentions berries or cream or in any context, it just kind of pops back in my head over the years. Yeah. So first of all, could you explain just kind of just a little background, your role? I mentioned you were the senior producer on this, but your role, what role did you play in bringing this to life?
Well, as you say, I was the producer, but the way this spot really got through was, and I think I've mentioned this to you before, there were creatives were Brendan Davis and Phil Kovitz, and poor Brendan Davis probably sang and behaved like the little lad about 75 times in different presentations over the course of getting this spot through. And, you know, we had at Shiat back in those days, we had a great relationship with Mars. We did some pretty cutting edge work, and this was just one of those. And, you know, I think that there were always a little, you know, when he would perform this, the people would, clients would sort of cock their heads and think, you know, what am I missing here? You know, or, you know, where are they taking us with this? But the concept of saying berries and cream, you know, six times in the commercial really got the point across, I'm sure.
Yeah, I can definitely imagine some different obviously ultimately you got approved, but some confusion in those initial pitches because it is not featuring any specific, you know, benefit or price point or where you can get it or a deal or anything like that, or a celebrity spokesperson. It's just this silly way to remember, oh, by the way, Starburst is selling berries and cream Starburst now.
It really was that. And it was sort of became iconic, I think, for probably that reason that you're mentioning, and just for the number of reasons which we'll get into, I'm sure.
So, yeah, do you have any more details? I know, like, the idea kind of started before it landed your desk, as far as the concept of doing this commercial.
Yeah.
But when it came to you, how familiar are you with, like, the sign-off process or the pitch process? Do you know if it changed very much over time, or if it pretty much was given to you as it was ideated?
You know, I would say that, you know, any client, if you tell them that you're going to say the name of the product six or seven times in the spot, they are happy. So I'm not sure that they pictured exactly what they got, But the fact that it, you know, repeating the product 18, you know, whatever, multiple times in the thing, they were like, oh yeah, great. Internally, I would say that creative directors at the time were, you know, Scott Vitrone, Ian Reichenthal, Jerry Graff, always pushing, like, how are you going to make this funnier? How's this going to be, you know, how are we going to get this, you know, that kind of thing. So, you know, they definitely pushed it. But I think, I don't think overall that it had a very difficult time through it. I just think that during the process, you know, there were other spots up against it as well. But this was always a favorite. And I don't think that there was a lot of difficulty getting it through, but there were about 75 meetings where he had to sing it.
It's like, I think I'm there, but explain to me one more time, right?
Yeah, exactly. No, 100%. And what exactly is he going to do? And, you know, so, you know, and if you think about it, you know, the randomness of a bus station, you know, and that's actually what the spot is called. The title of the spot really is Bus Station. Yeah. Funny enough, but which has absolutely nothing to do with it in anybody's mind, but it's a bus station and, you know, this little strange character popping up at a bus station to two kids. Once it was greenlit, there was a lot of discussion about where exactly we were going to find this person. And there was, we actually, you know, even with the limited budget we had, we did cast in Los Angeles, in New York. I think we may have done Chicago one day, and we did England as well. Because if you think about it, little lad is sort of, you know, a hearken to the old English, you know, days of, you know, so there was a consensus that we needed to try and put it out there and see what happened.
Yeah. So talk to me about the casting process. I know obviously landed on Jack Fervor is the actor in there. Mm-hmm. And his mannerisms, his personality, his dance and all that, obviously could have gone a very different direction. How much did you know in advance the specifics of how you wanted this person to behave versus it depending on the actor's portrayal of it? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
How much direction did you get?
It's funny. I wish that I still had the casting, you know, from that, because it's pretty amazing. In all the locations, we had that wig. So everybody had to put on a wig, and perform. Because we always knew that it was going to be that little Lord Fauntleroy or whatever the character is, sort of, you know, chop haircut. And Jack Fervor, he really stood out. And I mean, on the shoot day, I think he brought so much more. But, you know, in the casting, he definitely stood out as, you know, because I believe he has a background in dance and things like that. So, you know, he had a very graceful sort of, you know, movement and everything, and brought something to the character that many didn't. There were, you know, anytime that you do any sort of advertising, you know, you don't just get to go, you know, send a client one person.
Yeah.
There were some other choices. There was a guy who, once again, I'm going to forget the actor's name. Bob Hoskins. There was a guy in England who was like a middle-aged guy, looked like sort of like a Bob Hoskins. And he did this very gruff sort of berries and cream, which was a completely different direction. But there was something humorous about him. And then I think there was just like some other, we threw a third in there. But from the get-go, you know, everybody's favorite was Jack.
Yeah, you talk about how confusing it might have been to those who had to approve the idea. I imagine as an actor trying to like, okay, so you want me to like make sure I'm understanding what you're asking me to do. That would be, I'm not an actor, but to audition with that wig and be so silly, like you should be feeling silly, but it's like, is this the right kind of silly? Am I doing silly in the way you want, or am I just totally bombing this? I can imagine that would be a unique experience.
Yeah, it was. we did the callbacks and you like just knew, and you know, just talking to Jack, like he got the character, and I sort of feel bad for him because, you know, perhaps Jack would have had a career in something else and been successful. But since then he's been, you know, and I mean, now he's on, what is it? You can pay him to, you know, to send you a happy
Cameo.
Message. Cameo. Yeah. He's on Cameo and it's, you know, I sort of feel bad for him because he got, you know, typecast as mm-hmm. the Berries and Cream lad. So, but he brought a lot to it, and you know, once we did actually land on him in the casting, the next area was the costume. I mean, that little, you know, velvet sort of, you know, pantsuit, jumpsuit, you know, like I said, Lord Fauntleroy outfit was, you know, we had costume designers scouring all over Los Angeles to get just the right doily thing that he's wearing, you know. Everything yeah. about that costume was painstakingly. Scott Patron was on that like a cheap suit. So it was a great sort of, has become a great sort of iconic character.
Definitely original. Definitely stands out from the rest.
Definitely does.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and imagine, you know, Brendan Davis's, you know, relief of not having to perform it himself anymore was the other great thing. So,
yes, I can imagine.
Yeah.
So time to shoot. You're going to get going in Macus now. I think talking to you before, you mentioned, I believe the client was not able to attend that day. Originally was going
well,
to, but they were on set.
Yeah.
Right?
So as I said to you, I think there were three things that I think are the success of this. And when people talk about virality and, you know, how things become, you know, how can you make a viral sensation? I don't believe that there is any set formula for that. And I think that everybody knows that. But, you know, people will still try and sell you.
They try.
But there were three things. One was getting Jack Ferber as the talent, and that the casting was so critical. And, you know, I'm just not sure that the Bob Hoskins guy would have ever, you know, delivered what we've seen. The next thing was, you know, the attention to detail of that outfit. I mean, it is literally, you know, so perfect for what we were trying to do. And the third thing was, and not to say that the client would have, but there was a snowstorm when we were in Los Angeles before to shoot this. And so the clients couldn't make it out. So we didn't have a client on set. And that's not to say that the clients, you know, wouldn't have gone with what we were doing. But I do think that there was an opportunity, as we all know that work in this industry, when the client goes, well, can we have a more toned down version? Or can you pull it back? Can he just say Berries and Cream? Does he not have to, you know, can he not sing it? You know, can we try a version like that? And that's where you end up with that take that later on clients inevitably go, yeah, can I see that take? And then there's that potential.
Yeah.
Because they weren't there. Literally, I mean, in the edit process, it was very simple. It was like, this is what we have. You do not have him not singing it. You do not have him not, you know, jazz handing it or, you know, or doing his dance. It literally was, this is what we shot. And in terms of the edit, I recall that they had very few comments, except for one, which was the kick.
I was going to ask you about that. Tell me about the kick.
So the original version of the spot that aired did not have the kick. The client didn't like it. They didn't understand it. Jack just did that himself. He just riffed that all by himself, and we all thought it was hilarious. But and I actually believe that Jerry Kraft didn't like it either. Sorry, Jerry. But what went to air did not have the kick. And then somehow I believe that it was, I believe it was the director, Randy Crawlman, who leaked the version with the cake because he loved it so much. And I'm sure
it is kind of, if I remember right, it's kind of after the fact, like it's the commercial kind of wraps up and it's kind of just like a little cut.
Yeah. They're just sort of like standing there. The kids are sort of standing there. Like, what did we just see? And Jack's sort of there and Jack just throws a cake. You know, and the client didn't understand it. Right, exactly. And you know, look at it from a client perspective, they didn't understand it, right? And they go, is he trying to kick them? And like, we're like, no, it was just sort of a, you know, but to them, they're like, it looks hostile, you know? And that's the type of granular thing that, you know, you would get, like, had they been on set, there may have been many, many more. But they weren't. And you know, this was what they got. Oddly enough, I don't know if they've ever celebrated it internally. I do know that they tried to do recently a follow-up to it with Jack that he recorded himself in like his attic or something. But, you know, in terms of success of commercials, I mean, the fact that this has been seen, I think we've reached billions sometimes now. All over the world. I'm not sure that you could ask for a more successful spot, and just on Fluke alone, which, you know, has led to hundreds, if not thousands, of posted imitations that were completely, you know, made up on their own. So actually, let me back up a second here, though. So we finished shooting the spot on the day. We're at a bus station. We have it for 6 hours, probably. You know, it was an active bus station. And that was the beginning of, you know, we're going so far back here. That was the beginning of, hey, can you get me some, you know, what we would call now social content? Mm-hmm. What, you know, like, can we get something else? So we literally dropped a roll of, you know, white psych thing down and said to Jack, like, okay, can you teach, like, can we do maybe a how-to on the dance that you created? Because Jack made that dance himself. I mean, we obviously, he went through rounds and we looked at him with him and, you know, and stuff, but, you know, he's a dancer himself and choreographer, I think, everything. So he came up with that, you know, we with our, you know, yes, no, yeah, whatever. So he we were like, yeah, let's do a how to, you know, of the dance. And there were some things in there that he completely riffed on his own. I actually haven't looked at it. I should have looked at it before I came up. But I know there's a thing like, you know, where he talks about that, you know, that's, you know, what mommy want. And they go, but mommy's gone. And we're like, hey, this is just gold. Do you know what I'm saying? We're just like, you know, this is gold. This guy is just on his own coming up with, you know, funny little pieces and bits. So, you know, we created the little lad dance. Now, we put it up on a website, you know, just, you know, on a Starburst Berries and Cream website that we built. That was what you did, you know, back then. Yeah, that was the original social. So this spot has all the, you know, for, you know, the excitement and I don't know, you know, popularity that it has, and yet it never won a single award.
None. Yes.
Which, I was gonna ask you about if that. If you think about it, you know, no client could ask for anything better in terms of popularity and you know, virality. But this was back in the day when there weren't really awards for that type of thing. And I'm not sure that, you know, that there is even now a, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, virality award or something like that. But even with all of that, it did not get any attention. I mean, I've strained myself to think. I'm not even sure it was, you know, an honorable mention that, you know,
they didn't know how to categorize it.
They didn't know how to categorize it. But also, no one was really paying attention to the virality aspect because it was so new. Sure. So you have thousands of kids doing their own imitations and posting them online on YouTube. And we were looking at some of these things, and it was hilarious. And there was nothing. There was no, you know, and you would think in advertising in the industry that this would be something that you would want to recognize, but it wasn't. And the fact that, you know, it had that success and has had the amount of success that it has without, you know, even an honorable mention somewhere is,
I think the term gets overused, but it really was ahead of its time. Like it's the kind of thing that would, if you had something like that come out today, it would be talked about, it'd be recognized more. It's the kind of thing set up to go viral before it even had the social platforms to do so. It managed to do so.
Yeah, 100%. And the fact that, you know, I think I mentioned this to you last time. I mean, there is on YouTube somebody, and this was years ago, before, like, you know, really good, you know, Illustrator or Photoshopping or whatever and stuff, who actually edited the little lad into a Star Wars like video clip, like thing with the little lad kicking Darth Vader down the stairs. Do you know what I'm saying? And it's just like, oh my God, somebody spent so much time. I don't know, maybe he didn't spend that much time, but it, you know, the fact that somebody, you know, did that was, you know, it was just one of many that we noticed and thought was
hilarious. Yeah, and it's not like this was a TV show or he had tons of lines or a character development. This little small snippet of this character was enough. People like, I get what that guy is. I get the humor of that. I can imagine him in different situations, and it became a meme and something you do these videos with. And there's a Halloween costume, and then it had kind of a renaissance in the last few years with the TikTok.
Yes,
I think it was 2021. Yeah. It kind of became even people who didn't know about the original commercial that were just too young or unaware.
Yeah, it got a whole new audience. Right, yeah. It got a whole new audience. And the funny thing is that I don't think you can buy berries and cream Starburst.
Yeah, I don't know.
It was like it was a one-off like flavor that they had, which, do you know what I'm saying? I mean, like, you know, I can only imagine those kids that it's, you know, that have just seen her going to the store and being like, hey, where are the berries and cream Starburst? They're like, what are you talking about? You know? I mean, you know, did they re-release it for his follow-up that Jack did? I can't remember. They must
I don't
have,
remember.
Yeah. I mean, not that anybody's running out to buy them. But, you know, I mean, we used to chew those things, you know, sitting around the office for hours and, you know, with our teeth, you know, pulling our teeth out. But it's had this second life, which is just funny, you know.
So how did the shoot itself go? Like, there's not a whole lot of people involved, but like the two other guys at the station, were they cracking up? Was there lots of retakes? Like, how did it go?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I mean, the two other kids, like, they're like nothing, you know, like one guy has one line, I guess, yeah, berries and cream. And like, they were like total stoner dudes. I mean, the tall, skinny kid, I was like, wow, this is really a stretch for you, isn't it? Just That's standing funny. There acting like a, you know, like a, yeah, I'm eating berries and cream, you know? And
which also, you know, by the way, we give a lot of credit to the little lad. I think their deadpan was also part of the humor, just the fact that they're like, they didn't laugh or they're staring at this guy doing his dance, no reaction.
Oh yeah, well, no, I mean they were instructed not to do anything. Like, it's like funny. You're in your own reality and this guy's completely on his own reality. They, you know, we didn't want them to interact. It was supposed to just be this sort of standalone moment. But yeah, I mean, those kids, I mean, literally they were like such a secondary thought in terms of the casting. You could have taken any two kids off the street and put them in there.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's what they seemed like. Yeah,
right. It's you know, they're just random kids. The shoot day itself, I mean, you know, this was early on in Randy Crawlman's career, and I think sort of helped to launch his career. And, you know, it was a bus station. And what do you, you know, like, you know, I think we may have, you know, thrown some litter on the ground to make it look a little like, you know, real, you know, bus station-esque. Yeah. But, you know, because it was probably a lot cleaner than what we had. But, you know, and we just pulled the bus up and that was it. I mean, there is no set design on that. I think in the way back, there are some lockers that you can barely see that are in the background that we may have smudged some dirt on or something. I don't know. But it was, yeah, it was a very simple, you know, task. And then, you know, the little lad with his little, you know, suitcase, you know, that he drops, you know, like it drops and he's, you know, yeah, it was, you know, I mean, I don't know. I think we probably did it like 15 times, you know, it was not a hard day, you know, you know, you had to move the camera around, you know, but we did the wide maybe 15 times and then we did the, you know, the POVs.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, we had this like hour plus to like, hey, let's quickly drop a white and psych and, you know, shoot him against that. So,
okay. So now jump to the Yan. So the shoot's done. You've got a bunch of raw footage to work with and you're going home. What did you think you had something unique? Did you think it went well?
We knew we had something pretty funny. You know, like I said, though, you know, no one knows what's going to be viral, but we knew we had something funny. There obviously was the concern about, yeah, the client wasn't here. So, you know, how are they going to take it? The editor was Gavin Cutler, Kenzie Cutler. He knew that it was, you know, it was funny. I mean, period. It was just funny. And it was a very easy edit. And, you know, like I said, I think there were like a couple back and forths with the client. It was not a lengthy process because they, you know, if they asked us, you know, do you have anything, you know, be like, nope, this is what we got.
Yeah. So was there an initial response, just very, not much of a response, or was it clearly positive, or what did they think when they saw the cuts?
I think that they, you know, after Brendan Davis, you know, performing it 75 times, I think that they sort of knew what to expect.
Okay.
You know, and we had chosen Jack and, you know, at that point, and so they had seen him perform it. I think the only thing that, you know, they really would have not been aware of, you know, I mean, we prepped this in all the classic ways. I mean, they saw the wardrobe, they saw the, you know, they saw the other kids, you know, all that stuff. The only thing they may not have been really aware of is exactly the angle in the bus station that we're in.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, I think that they were not shocked. They didn't fall off the floor. You know, they played it very close to their chest. You know, they just sort of like, this was one of those ones where, and you know, many clients now you don't come to shoots. Because there are definitely those clients, yeah, in the world right now who will go through every painstaking piece of process of the, you know, of the production phase, and then we'll be like, okay, go shoot it, and then it's all on you. And this was sort of my early days of one of those where they're like, you know, because they couldn't make it, it was like, well, it's all on you. And when we delivered the spot, it was exactly what we had said. I mean, it wasn't anything, you know, the kick was, you know, yeah, but it was exactly what they had been sold. So it wasn't like, you know, there was surprise or anything like that. To be honest, I wonder what, you know, in the office they thought amongst themselves when they, you know, when they saw it, but, you know, I don't think that they weren't like ecstatic about it, but they weren't also like, oh my God, we can't run that, you know? Yeah. So it was just sort of like, okay. You know, and I think that it probably sold out Bears and Cream pretty quickly for them. So,
yeah. And at least awareness of Starburst again in general, even if you don't buy that flavor, just, yeah, very right, much putting them.
Yeah. It's place. Always, yeah. It's a classic Starburst spot, you know, and it's got a lot of brand, you know, brand awareness for sure.
So like you mentioned before, I know virality or whatever you want to call it when it comes to media, isn't something you can predict or perfectly formulate. So obviously it's funny and funny stuff spreads, but there have been funny things that didn't reach this level of virality. So
yeah,
I'm not asking you for the formula or anything, because I know it doesn't exist, but what do you think made this get so far and wide? What was the success of this?
I honestly, like you said at the beginning, earworm, right? I mean, it is a little catchy tune, right? That sticks in your head. It's got a little dance to it, which, you know, I mean, it maybe not have taken it as much if it had just been Jack sitting in a chair at the bus station and he didn't get up, you know what I'm saying, and just sang it.
So.
Maybe it wouldn't have had, you know, as much. So I think that, I think Jack and his whole getup, you know, it was, you know, it was sort of perfect in that way. So I'm not meaning to say that, you know, that only, you know, song and dance is viral, but in this sort of kooky, funny way,
yeah,
perhaps, you know.
Well, again, I don't want to. We're not suggesting this is the first thing ever to be kooky and funny, right? But it was kind of early in this. I think it's been done more since then. This makes me think about I think it was Mountain Dew Kickstarter, the Puppy Monkey Baby. Super weird, random, goofy, nothing to do with Mountain Dew, but just memorable. Or a lot of like the Skittles Taste of the Rainbows, like some of that stuff that has happened where
it's same creatives who did that.
Yeah. There's been some levels of virality, but it's like it's memorable and a quirky, unexpected, random type of humor, which is a fine balance between just being like awkward and not funny versus like awkward and funny. And so whatever you can describe that. It's been done since, but Berries and Cream was kind of an early swing at being like, let's just make this so weird that it's funny and memorable and let it be what it is. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It was sort of like a, it is what it is sort of, project. I give credit to Brandon Davis and Flo Kovitz for pushing this thing through, because it was, and Scott Patron and Michael Paul, but it was just on its face was, here it is. Here's your product. We're singing about it.
Yep.
Six times we'll mention it, and you know, and it'll be funny. And it fit, you know, right in that genre of everything that we did back then for Skittles and for Starburst. All of that work, which was, you know, and some of that work also won awards, whereas this didn't. But
we need a retroactive award. We need to have that come back. And
right. It's sort of like the Lifetime Achievement Award of advertising. This ad that's, you know, 30 years old, still on, got legs. Yeah. I just think that it was the right time. I can't say that the client would have ruined it, but there's just that chance they've been on set.
Yep. We love our clients, but it happens and they have reasons. They have they have people to answer to and they want to have their input, but it just, there is something about too many cooks in the kitchen, so 100%. To speak, that it can kind of, we can wear some stuff down.
Right. 100%. And, you know, this was one of those things where, and I've shot many a spot where, you know, like for Budweiser, where they don't come to the shoot, but you have to get the board. You know what I'm saying? Well, the board was the same on this from the beginning. It's not like we went off the rails, you know, and created something completely different. It is the board. So it's exactly what we said it was going to be. So there wasn't anything that they could, you know, have a fit about afterwards. But,
and this particular commercial is a prime example of why it's important that whoever is going to give final approval has at least the context of what led up to its creation. Because like, this is so weird and random that if you had never heard the concept and this just landed on your desk and said, "We good to run this?" You'd be like, "Whoa, this is crazy." But if you didn't kind of understand the philosophy behind it. So basically, I guess I'm speaking to the listeners out there. If you're someone who approves creative, make sure you have the understanding of what got it to that point. So you're evaluating it based on that, not just do I like this or not myself.
Right. And the funny thing is that, you know, and who knows, I'm just speculating here, but they had a certain amount of dollars allocated for Berries and Cream. Had this been like a regular straight up Starburst spot, maybe they would have been like, this is too risky and pushed it to the side. Do you know what I'm saying? But this was the money that they had for Berries and Cream and was all that they could have had. And I'm not saying that that's what happened, but you could see a world where that is.
Yeah.
But I do think that like I said, Brendan had to do it 75 times. I mean, I do think everybody within the chain at Mars knew at the time that this is what we were doing.
But yeah, so. That's a good point. Well, as you look back on it now, I know it's been years since, and you've probably talked about it in various capacities since then. Any other like takeaways or insights or stories, anything that I haven't asked you about that we're missing out on you want to share? If not, that's fine.
No, I don't. I mean, I really think that it's those key highlights that I mentioned and the fact that virality is everybody says, wants to be able to say that they know what it is or how to make it, but I don't think that's true. And this just took off in a way that, was something that was fun for kids to imitate and do on their own interpretations of, and allow them to express themselves in a fun way. So it worked.
I love it. It's definitely will be not be the last time that I go back and watch it again, probably, or just have it come across my feed unprompted because it pops up every now and then. Well, thank you again for being on today.
No, thank you.
What are you up to these days, and what's the best way for people to either follow you in that or to get in touch with you?
I'm on LinkedIn. I'm still an executive producer, still doing the same stuff.
Okay.
Just freelancing around or and working at Verizon. So
awesome. Awesome. Well, I'll look forward to the next stuff that comes out from your camp. And, this definitely, I think in my opinion, should be on your virtual trophy case, so to speak,
because I have it linked on my LinkedIn page.
There you go.
It is, even though it's, I did a lot of, I did a bunch of Skittle spots, I did all those things, but this one just seems to have, like I said, legs. I mean, it's everybody knows it. So it's great.
Yep, exactly. Well, thank you again for being on. All right. Thank you to the listeners who joined us
today.
Thank you,
Cameron.
And we'll see you next time.